number four. Bickley Murata here on this Tuesday, live from the Auction Community Studios on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Time to talk some football, NFL, college football. We can go either way with our next guest. He is a college football analyst for Fox. He's also part of the Brock and Salk podcast at our sister station, 710 ESPN in Seattle. Brock Huard, our guest on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Brock, how are you, man?
Good afternoon, fellas. I'm doing great. We actually taped our podcast this morning. Tuesdays are kind of like the old days for me of going in the studio and cranking a bunch of stuff out and looking at all those poor souls that have to do radio every single day. Oh, my gosh.
You're reading my mind, Brock. You're reading my mind. We'll go inside baseball here.
Oh, my God.
Do you feel like you're stealing money at this point? I mean, be honest. After doing a morning show for that long.
Oh, I just feel rejuvenated. I'm getting enough sleep. People have said I hardly recognized you anymore when I was doing the old thing like a zombie every day, every single day. And now it's just once a week. I'm high on life. Let's go. I get to talk to you guys.
Yeah.
Time for other people. So let's make this happen.
Well, good, because we're going to stretch you out, man. We got a lot to roll at you. All right. I'm going to start outside the box, because something that struck me, I saw Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson exchange jerseys. And not only are players exchanging jerseys this year, they're getting real intricate in the way they sign them. They're personalizing them to a way I've never seen before. We saw Nick Bosa and Kyler Murray do it on Sunday. Back in the day when you were playing, I'm sure you didn't exchange jerseys, but had you, is there somebody's you wish you could have attained?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, probably Tom Brady. You know, just a ton of respect for some of those guys that in my era, you know, had started to hit stardom, but also had done it for a long, long, long time. You know, it is interesting you bring that up, because I thought you were going to paint the question of, can you imagine doing that? And I remember being with Peyton, and Peyton never said a bad thing about anybody. But there were a few guys that I remember sitting in our QB meeting room, and he'd be like, man, I don't know how they have all this joy and can smile after a loss and have that interaction. Like, it was just a handshake and go. But to have just this, like, love fest, especially for the loser in some of those battles.
Right.
It's kind of remarkable to watch today how quickly guys can flush it, find that camaraderie, find that kinship that wasn't necessarily around, I think, decades and decades ago. But, yeah, probably for me, just kind of the utmost respect for certainly those quarterbacks that did it for a long, long, long time.
Well, I like the way you answered the question better than the question I asked. So props to you, Brock.
He is rejuvenated.
You are rejuvenated.
Oh, I mean, I would have never thought that way if I'd been doing my show every single day. I would have just been, you know, trying to just stay afloat. Now I'm energized. Now I take questions different directions. So, yeah, let's go.
That's great.
Brock Huard, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. Let's focus on the NFL team in your city, the Seahawks. And I think, you know, I'm surprised. They're as good as they are, but I'm also foolish. Why would I doubt Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll as a combination at this point? But I think they've overachieved, and they're a really good team, Super Bowl contender at this point. Are you surprised at all with how competitive, how strong they've looked this year, Brock?
Yeah, I would say borderline even shocked at 8-2. But I did dig into some numbers for our little podcast we did this morning, and they're 7-1, I believe, in games decided by 8 points or less this year. 7-1. In the previous 7 years for Russell Wilson, you would think, oh yeah, I mean, he's always that way. He's got more fourth quarter and overtime wins than anybody. He always wins the close ones. That's not the case. In the previous 7 years, he's actually under 500 in games decided by 0 or 8. So is the worm going to turn? Is it going to get back to what's been traditionally for 7 years, you know, a situation where it's a coin flip at best in those situations and maybe even a little less than 50-50? Or is he and Pete and this team going to just continue to find miraculous ways to win these close games? Because, frankly, you know, as I look at the schedule over the next 6 weeks, I think almost every one of them is going to be a one-possession game. They don't have the defensive talent to run away from anybody. And they still have some, I think, inexperience on the perimeter of guys that haven't done it at the highest level for long periods of time that I think it'll be incredibly competitive the rest of the way. And to be sitting at 8-2 is borderline miraculous.
All right. Well, I want to ask your take on a couple of Cardinal-related issues, because here in Arizona, we're trying to wrap our heads around what in the heck happened to David Johnson. And the way that he runs the football now, I said it earlier, it's like he runs like an offensive lineman who just picked up a fumble and started running with it. He's plotting. He's just not the same guy. Have you been around running backs who just lost their taste for battle? What do you think is happening in Arizona with David Johnson?
Do you guys remember Thomas Rawls?
Yes.
Yeah.
With the Seahawks?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was a guy that I think had a 1,000-yard season. He had like a 200-yard game. He filled in for Marshawn. It was like, wow, how in the world did they find this undrafted free agent guy? And you didn't miss a beat. He was ferocious. We wrote, you know, our producer, Boy Howdy, wrote songs about him, lots of songs, like amazing, like just parodies and fun, and the guy was hilarious, and he opened his mouth, and you kind of loved what you heard, and then you watched the physical violence he ran with, and then he got hurt, and he was done. I mean, he got hurt, and literally, he could not function again, and to the point where Mike Salk, on one of our last sit-downs with Pete, said, man, I got to ask you, what in the heck happened to Thomas Rawls? And Pete's like, long story, we'll talk about it off the air at some point, you know, maybe way down the road, because he just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And obviously, David Johnson had more of a track record than Thomas Rawls. He got paid an extension. He had more sustained success, but I think equally got nicked up, got injured, and yeah, he's nowhere near the same guy. So I think that position, as much as anyone, you could talk to an analyst in probably every town, and they would quickly rattle off a name like Thomas Rawls in every market, where that position, more than any other, I think can simply fall off the cliff.
Yeah, I got to ask you a non-football-related question as a follow-up here, Brock. Did you encourage your producer to keep writing these parody songs, or did he do it on his own?
Because we have one of those
same
producers,
problem.
Too, but we can't get him to stop.
Well, are they good?
No, they're terrible.
The writing is good. The performance lacks a little bit, I'll be honest.
Well, when Boy Howdy jumped the shark when he tried to sing Adele. So he had, like, lots of good ones. He can do the rock ones pretty good. And, you know, there were all sorts of parodies with Rawls. Keep on Rawls and Rawls and Rawls. And he had some good ones. But when he went Adele, that's when it kind of jumped the shark. And I think that was the last platinum, well, non-platinum winning record that he spun.
Wow.
All right, now back to football. On the David Johnson front,
yes.
The Cardinals paid him a lot of money, $39 million over 3 years. He's in year two of that deal. And I know, regardless of how this shakes out, they're not going to get the bang for the buck that they were hoping for. When are NFL teams going to stop paying running backs altogether, or is that ever going to happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, I would say the other position group that jumps out, and at least in my era that I can remember personally watching, are defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
That you pay a defensive lineman, and all of a sudden, wow, Khalil Mack was awesome for that 1 year.
Yeah.
Is that really worth the bang for the buck? Albert Haynesworth was a monster, and then he got paid. And those guys that just have to be violent, right, and just have so many collisions game in, game out, series in, series out? Or do they have that same stinger, right, that, you know, when they were fighting for that and were incentivized to play at that level versus, you know what, I got lots of millions in the bank and I'm pretty good and, you know, I don't really have to either run or tackle with that kind of violence. I think that is always the question that comes about when you pay those guys that kind of money. I wouldn't want to be in that position. Right, the Seahawks, way back when, you know, a very familiar name was Sean Alexander. And Sean is a good friend of mine. He's a great guy. And I remember when they were in that position, I think he was coming off of an MVP season, and it was like, wow, I don't know if you're ever going to get, you know, in this contract what you've already gotten from him. Well, and it turned out that was exactly true. I think he'd probably be a better comp, certainly than Thomas Rawls, because Sean accomplished a ton, had a nearly 30-touchdown season. But go look at his numbers after that mega contract. And, yeah, I think those stories are out and about. And ultimately, you know, that's why that position of general manager and paying those people and counting on them to be equally incentivized is awfully, awfully difficult.
Good point. And to me now, it's almost like spend the money on the offensive line and get the running back anywhere else. And that seems to be a smarter play. All right, let me ask you about this, because one of the fascinating things about the Seahawks is your franchise endured one of the worst Super Bowl losses ever. You lost a hallmark defense that came with its own nickname, and yet you've sustained pretty much everything. You haven't fallen off the cliff. That hasn't been the case in Arizona, and now the Cardinal defense is kind of coming under the crosshairs for a lot of soft performances, for not being able to close out teams at the end of the game, for not being able to cover tight ends. Where do you go with a story like this? Do you look at the defensive coordinator? Is it almost always the talent? Does our general manager bear the blame for this? What's your take on the way the Cardinals are playing defensively?
Well, I would point to the Seahawks first, a place that I've got obviously a lot of background here the last dozen years or so, and just kind of watching every play, you know, having an investment in their success. The better they did, the better our show did, the better our station did, and everything else, and just being really, in some ways, emotionally wired in with those guys. And when you have owner and you have president, GM, you have head coach, you have quarterback, you have those things in order, your house in order, and that way you have a chance, I think, to sustain success against many others that don't. But when you've got turnover at coach and turnover at quarterback and turnover at GM and, you know, and inconsistencies in some of those places, you run the risk of being what the majority of the NFL is. And that's constantly up and down. And I think, you know, that's probably how I would answer it, just kind of up close in Seattle, the marriage between John Schneider and Pete Carroll and the fact that they didn't fight and claw and have egos that said, nope, it was my doing. Nope, it was my doing. It was the you know, the ingredients I gave you. Nope, it was what I made of those ingredients. They never do. They're egoless in that way relationally. And that is so stinking hard to find. And, oh, by the way, a quarterback that is lockstep with his head coach. I mean, walks like him, talks like him, speaks like him. So I think that marriage, you know, all of those marriages have allowed just for the, you know, the foundation to remain strong. I look at Arizona, I see a bunch of turnover in some of those spots, yeah. Right? At quarterback, the decisions made, at head coach, at coordinators, and you just have so much movement there. I think it is awfully, awfully hard, you know, to sustain or build any strong foundation moving forward.
Rocky Ord, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. He's a college football analyst for Fox, also part of the Brock and Salk podcast. Switching to college, and I'm fascinated by what's going on in the Pac-12, especially up in your neck of the woods with Washington. I mean, 2016, the Huskies qualify for the college football playoff. They run into a buzzsaw in Alabama. But I think the thought at that point, maybe I'm wrong, was this is just the beginning for Chris Peterson and this program. And here we are 3 years later. They're under 500 at this point in a less than dominant Pac-12. What is the level of unrest or dissatisfaction or frustration, whatever word you want to use, about Chris Peterson and the direction of that program in Seattle?
Well, I think for anyone that's sane in Seattle and just not emotionally, you know, held hostage to their emotions, and then they look at, you know, this run that he's been on. So, yes, 16 was a playoff, 17 was the Fiesta Bowl, 18 was a Rose Bowl. There's been two conference championships in those 3 years. Other than a couple years with Don James, you've not had a run like that in 50 years. So, you know, we talk about sustainability and just a strong foundation of what he's built in his staff and his recruiting, places that, you know, it wasn't in a long, long time. And you'd have to look at, you know, just a 2 or 3 year stretch that Don James had is a comparable, and that's about it. So I think for the sane people, you lean into that. Recruiting has been phenomenal. This year has been a severe disappointment. Last year, offensively, a severe disappointment. So, you know, is there going to have to be some staff changes on that side of the ball? Possibly. Are they going to have to evaluate, you know, just kind of systematically what you are doing in today's college football offensively? I think so, to a degree. But, man, that guy is rock solid. To me, one of the five best in the profession. You better keep him and hope that he continues to coach. I think, you know, as an alum, my fear is that he's just going to say, I'm good. You know, I'm good. I've done enough. You know, I'm just not maybe built like some of these others in this marketing sales world. And eventually we'll walk away from coaching while he's still able to do it, much more so than any pressure that anyone's going to put on him for unrealized expectations being met.
All right, Brock, last thing, and we appreciate your time. Pac-12, I said less than dominant, but there's two teams that are right on the doorstep of a playoff, and they're both pretty good. Do you think the Pac-12 gets a team in, and who would you favor? Do you think Oregon's better than Utah?
Yeah, I think that all depends, unfortunately, on what happens around them, what happens with Georgia, Clemson run the table. Like, you know, I think they get in ahead of the Big 12, and I think our early rankings have kind of proven that and shown that of what the committee thinks between those two conferences. It's Clemson and nobody else in the ACC. So I think it really depends on what happens in the Big 10 and in the SEC, and they're going to be, unfortunately, prisoner to some of that. Those two teams are elite. They're senior-driven. Both quarterbacks are seniors that absolutely elevate everyone around them. Defensively, they're balanced at every level. I'll tell you this, if those two match up in Santa Clara, I think ASU is going to give Oregon a game this weekend. I don't know what you guys think, but I do. I think it sets up just their system defensively. If what they do, as aggressive as they are, it's at home there in Tempe. I think they circle the wagons for Herm and those guys. I think they play their tails off. I think that's going to be a competitive game because it is hard to go unblemished in conference play and go 9-0. So I think that will be a challenge for Oregon. But if they get through that, they're going to beat Oregon State and they're going to meet Utah, and I would favor Utah. Those dudes are nasty.
They are.
They hit. They have seven seniors on defense. They are built for right now in the three triplet seniors. So this is their season. Yeah. They're built to do it. And they would go, by the way, I think toe-to-toe with a bunch of those teams and give Clemson a game and give Ohio State a game and give Georgia a game simply because of the veteran leadership and just how nasty they play
defensively. It's funny you should say that because watching them just destroy ASU, I thought this defensive line could hang in the SEC. I remember having that thought, and then I thought, oh, that's ridiculous. And then hearing you say it, no, it's not.
Kevin Sumlin said it last year. You know, we sat in that meeting, if you remember that beautiful debacle of a game that I got to call that I think was, I don't know, 40-0 at halftime in Salt Lake. And we sat with Sumlin the night before and his staff who'd been in the SEC, and they're like, yeah, this is the one SEC team in our league, man. This is this front right here. And while they lost a couple linebackers to the league, they returned all of them big boys, and their secondary is better. And, that's a crew that, as I said, I don't know if I would predict them, and I wouldn't, to beat Clemson or to beat Ohio State, but they would not get their doors blown off, and they'd go toe-to-toe with them.
Yeah. Brock, thanks so much for the time.
Good
Always
stuff,
appreciate
dude.
You joining us. Best of luck with the podcast and everything else, and enjoy all that free time.
Stay well-rested,
Brock.
Have
me anytime. You got my number. I'm refreshed. You just let me know.
What do you
want to talk?
What are you doing tomorrow?
See ya, Brock.
Thanks, Brock.
See you,
appreciate it. Brock Ewart, our guest here on the Colter Automotive
Great,
Group
dude.
Sports Line. Your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti. Today is Ticket Window and Turkey Window Tuesday, presented by Arizona Central Credit Union. Listen at 4:15, and you could win a family four-pack of tickets to see the Suns host the New Orleans Pelicans on Thursday night, plus a free Thanksgiving turkey thanks to Fry's Food Stores.
We may never find someone to replace you. Levi Potter or Funica may have to do.
I don't know what his problem is.
Now, and that's sad.
I want to hear Boy Howdy samplings now.
Boy Howdy.
Sometimes a Cardinals fan.
Was this about David Johnson?
This was about Jonathan Cooper getting injured.
Yeah, because you mentioned Nate Potter. How long have you been poisoning the airwaves with this crap?
A long time.
I know. It's crazy, right?
This predates Bickley and Murata, I think, doesn't it?
Before we move on to hash marks, let's give our listeners a quick heads up of what we're doing next segment so we can get their input.
We got some of it on Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, we do. Okay.
Yeah,
but, all right. Good enough.
We can set it up here.
Go ahead.
And then I got an Instagram story I want to tell.
Okay.
I ran across this today on ESPN.com, and it made me think. It was baseball related, and the baseball question, if I can find it in my never-ending notes here. Here we go. It was like basically a what if.
Mm-hmm.
For every baseball team. And their Diamondbacks dilemma, they call it the Diamondbacks fan dilemma. Would you rather have a healthy Brandon Webb, but no big unit in Game 7? So the different scenarios. Brandon Webb, we can all agree, tragic story of a guy at the height of his career, cut short, never pitched again. Right at the prime of his career. Oh, you could have that, but if you had that, you wouldn't get Randy Johnson availability in Game 7 of the 2001 World Series.
Then you'd have to reconcile, would they have won that game without Randy Johnson?
Yes.
Would you forego that memory of him walking out of the bullpen with the wind blowing?
Well, not only that, but they won the series.
And they won the World Series.
I could do without the image, quite honestly.
This is very much like a game my 10-year-old plays with me all the time. It's Would You Rather. And they're really ridiculous things with him. Would you rather swallow a mouthful of bees or sleep in a bed full of snakes? That's what he'll ask me, stuff like that. Would you rather have your backside eaten by a shark? Or that's the stuff he comes up with. These are sports-related ones that are kind of
interesting. with your son, it's fine. But when I do it on Yay or Nay, you want to get rid of the segment.
He's 10. I love
and
the
And you're
segment.
Not much more than that. Right?
I told you that, Jarrett. I'm a big fan of Yay or Nay most times.
By the way, Jamie Leverington just tweeted us.
Really?
Missed it by 3 minutes. Sorry, got to listen to 12:30, people. Rest of the week, Wheel of Four trips. Wheel of sports trips.
Now, I don't think that would preclude Jamie from being a caller if somebody else fails to call in the 10-minute window.
You have a few more days.
So, Jamie, you still have a chance. So that's coming up next, the what-ifs, and we've had a lot of suggestions from our listeners, and we can go over them because that kind of stuff makes you think. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Instagram very rarely makes me think, but it's making me think now because the post that we talked about yesterday that Megan Johnson, David Johnson's wife, put up.
Yeah.
About I've never seen a player and hardest thing I've seen in 8 years of watching football. Somebody with so much talent on the sideline. We love you, David Johnson. If you click on that photo now, all it says is we love you, David Johnson.
The Cardinals staff is a
commentary
very powerful entity. They've been able to scrub a lot of this stuff in the past. I've noticed. Tweets that get sideways tend to disappear. And maybe that's true with most NFL teams.
Like I said yesterday, I have no problem with Mrs. Johnson feeling that way at all. I love the support. Very little good is done by making that feeling public.
No. No. Especially in a masculine-fueled culture like the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, much as I feel the same way on social media, if it's a positive thing for your partner or somebody that you love.
Yeah.
So-and-so completes me every day as a gift when I wake up and look in her eyes. You know what? Tell her. You don't got to tell everybody. Tell her.
Yeah.
You could tell David Johnson you're in
Thank
his corner.
You. Listen,
support. You don't have to tell everybody.
That last thing you just said is so true. It is so true. And it is so true.
I'm just jealous because nobody's ever posted that about me.
Right. That's right. There is that. And listen, part of me is because a lot of people I've talked to, you know, this is just not a secret. She's got a very big presence in David's life. A lot of his charity acts they do together.
Not the first, won't be the last.
I was with them when she proclaimed her son would never play football, to which David had, right? I saw that happening. So the strength of her conviction has been pretty clear to me for some time. Okay. But at the same time, having somebody who cares about you that much, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
This is David Johnson, folks.
I just thought it was interesting. I appreciate the listeners that pointed it out. That caption has changed.
What I thought was interesting, there's a tweet out there from Steve Nash that says, devastated. I'm like, uh-oh, what happened? Well, the Tottenham Hotspurs. They've sacked Mauricio Pochettino. So a popular head coach got fired.
Oh.
Steve Nash is a devastated fan right now.
Sarah, put that in the update. You got to put that. Tottenham. You got to lead with that.
Tottenham.
Yeah, we got that coming up in 5 minutes.
They've sacked their manager. They have.
Isn't it? Go, no.
Yeah.
Kick Jared, that soccer ball.
Jared, can I hear all three levels, please?
Sorry, you're devastated. No, we don't have time.
You're devastated?
We've got to hit the break.
Hello.
All right. Arizona Sports, either or is coming up next. We don't know what to expect. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, here we go. You ready for this, Vinny?
I'm ready for this, Vinny.
Sports, either ors, would you rather, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. Arizona sports style.
Okay.
Credit to ESPN for their baseball piece in which they had one of these fan dilemmas for every major league franchise. And the one for the Diamondbacks was, would you rather have a healthy Brandon Webb for the entirety of his career? And if you did, would or not have Randy Johnson in game
seven.
I butchered that. Game seven of the World Series.
Okay.
So we put this out on Twitter. Jarrett put it out there on Twitter at Bickley_Murata.
Not everybody quite understood it. I had to put it out twice because the first one, I gave an example.
Yes.
And everyone just answered the example question rather than giving me their own.
Here's your example question. Yeah, you did put for example. Would you rather have had the Suns win the Kareem coin flip or had Amare and Diaw not get suspended?
Wow. See, now that's good. My answer to the first question isn't that difficult. To me, as much as I like Brandon Webb, and Brandon is a super cool dude, and as great as he was, I wouldn't compromise or risk anything at all about that Game 7. Nothing. It was
perfect. That doesn't mean you don't feel like Brandon Webb's career was robbed at the height of it, because I feel that way, too.
Of course it was.
But how do you trade that in for... at the risk of sounding insensitive, it's the one championship this city has.
Right.
Major League Sports.
Right. Well...
Because I could just hear the flood of Rattlers and Mercury. What about that?
What about the Rattlers, Murata?
I love the Rattlers. You know this.
I know you do. In the case, everything was perfect about that game, from Schilling battling Clemens to Randy coming out of the bullpen to the weather that whipped up at the end. Nothing. Yes. I would trade any of that. So that, but this question.
Jarrett's example question?
Yes.
To me, this is easy for me because of the timeline of my life.
Okay. So you either get those two guys for the rest of that series against the Spurs, hoping it's enough not only to beat the Spurs, but to win a title. Or you get Lou Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
And the Suns likely would have won a title. The Bucks won a title with Lou Alcindor early in his career, but he left pretty early.
Yeah.
To me, it's the unknown of Amari and Boris, because that's more germane to my fan experience.
Okay.
I didn't start watching the Suns back then. I wasn't alive in 1969.
Everything
get what
about
I'm saying?
The Phoenix Suns could be so different had they won.
Did it change things for the Milwaukee Bucks that much?
No, but
out of one title.
But that was Herb Cole. That was a franchise that was low wattage, low money, and you knew what Colangelo assembled the fourth best winning percentage despite not having these guys.
Yeah,
he would have him and him together. I think I would bet on that.
All right.
I don't know. It's a tough one.
Here we go. Here's from Ish. Would you rather have had picked Doncic first or had Carson Palmer not tear his ACL when the Cardinals were 9-1? Again, this one is incredibly easy for me. It's Carson. I think that was a Super Bowl team. That was reduced to starting Ryan Lindley in a playoff game. They were dominant that year. And Luka Doncic is fantastic, but I'm still on the Ayton train. I still think he's going to be a star player. So for me, it's easy. It's Carson Palmer.
Jared?
If you say Doncic, I'm going to smack you.
You get so sensitive about DeAndre Ayton. I mean, seriously. You can be so salty about everyone and everything except this guy.
He's
like your little teddy bear. You just want to hug him.
That's not true. I just think he's been unfairly treated.
Unfairly treated?
This is a very similar question in the broadest sense to the Kareem versus, you know, Amare Diaw thing. Like, do you take a mid-season situation or what could be? But I'd probably go with the Carson Palmer.
I think I would too, because that would have been a shot at a Super Bowl with a team that was incredibly popular here. And you're right, DeAndre Ayton has got plenty of time to narrow this perceived gap that has widened so far this
year. I have a good one here. Somebody tweeted in, would you rather punch Tim Donaghy in the face or knee Bruce Bowen in the groin?
I'd probably go Bowen.
I would go...
It's not an easy one.
Tim was a good guy.
Bruce Bowen was really off the court. He was a great guy.
Oh, yeah.
I think I'd punch Tim Donaghy in the face.
It's so funny.
It sounds so ridiculous.
I was just talking to a longtime Spurs fan last night, and Bruce Bowen's name came up. And he said, Bruce Bowen is probably my all-time favorite Spur. And I said, you have no idea how much the fan base of the Suns hates that guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's...
And I said, what was the flip side? Who did the Spurs fans hate? And he said, Steve Nash. And I said, how does anybody hate Steve Nash? It's like hating Santa Claus. It's like hating Larry Fitzgerald.
Because they think Steve Nash took a dive in that game.
Yeah, he took a dive. He almost broke the scorer's table. Here's one from Brad. Would you rather Santonio Holmes doesn't catch the Super Bowl winning catch or 93 Suns winning the finals? Or I guess you could amend that. John Paxson misses the shot. I think this is a great comparison.
Wait. John Paxson missing his shot in Game 6 or?
Santonio Holmes not catching that pass in the end zone. Which, here's the parallel. Because that play for Santonio Holmes, that was a second down play.
Mm-hmm.
John Paxson's shot, had he missed it, the Suns would have gone to Game 7. So I still think that's almost a perfect comparison.
That's good.
But for me, I would rather prefer that Paxson missed the shot. Because you know what would have happened had the Cardinals won that Super Bowl, Bick?
Yeah.
They would have an asterisk next to their name. They would always be, oh, that's the worst team ever to win a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah, that's a team that lost to the Patriots by 40.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Yeah, and could you imagine had you have gotten that game set? But again, really, if you'd have thought, and I don't want to get people ticked at me here, but if you'd have thought Michael Jordan was going to lose a Game 7, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. Whatever.
That's my opinion.
Would have been tough.
Nobody has to share that opinion. That's just my opinion.
How about this one, one of the ones from that Super Bowl as well? Would you rather stop James Harrison on that touchdown run or intercept David Boston's touchdown in the Rose Bowl?
I'd rather intercept David Boston's touchdown.
That directly leads to a victory.
That was the ultimate winning play, whereas there was a whole other half to play in the Super Bowl. It's still the single most momentum-shifting play in the history of the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's got to be, right?
Yeah, it has to be.
A 14-point swing with no time left on the clock?
Mm-hmm. Has to be.
I don't know if this is displaying correctly. Do you have any more, Jared?
Jerry Colangelo doesn't sell the Suns or Jerry Colangelo doesn't sell the D-backs?
Ooh.
That's a good one.
That's a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
judging from the amount of success the Suns had with Jerry Colangelo as opposed to without Jerry Colangelo, I think that's pretty clear.
And given the fact that the Suns are his first love as well, I would say that, mm-hmm. the Suns.
All right, the Cardinals draft Terrell Suggs or the Cardinals draft Adrian Peterson?
Oof.
They would have drafted Adrian Peterson at a time when he could have made more of a difference for the Cardinals than Terrell Suggs, if I remember the chronology properly.
I'd go Suggs. They got to a Super Bowl with the player they drafted instead of Adrian Peterson and Levi Brown. And Terrell Suggs won a Super Bowl with Baltimore and was a cornerstone of the franchise for 15 years. I'd go Suggs.
Hard to argue with that.
Yeah. Told you, that's the only time I've literally thrown things, and I could say it here, literally thrown things at my television in frustration when the Cardinals didn't draft Terrell Suggs, and they drafted out of that spot.
Well, and again, they had a guy who gave him a second-round grade. That's why they didn't draft him, which is a joke.
Look, we got to hit a break. I say keep those coming.
That's good stuff.
That's good stuff.
Fantastic.
Listen, each day this week at 7:30 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 4:30 p.m. for your name and the chance to spin the wheel of sports trips. Each qualifier will have a 44% chance to win one of 12 amazing sports road trips, including Cardinals at Seahawks, Suns at Lakers, ASU basketball at the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas, or D-backs at Cubs. Winners will spin the wheel this Friday, and you still have time to enter. And you can do that by texting SPIN to 620-620 right now. That's SPIN, S-P-I-N, to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports Wheel of Sports Trips. Coming up, good news coming out of a scary moment in college football. We'll fill you in on it next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station. Bickley and Murata, Song of the Day. Brought to you by Vital 4 Men. Sometimes you want to hit rewind. Now you can with Vital 4 Men. Find out more at vital4men.com.
I'm just going to set you up. I love playing Metallica because Vinny always goes into his James Hetfield. And you do it very, very
well. That's the only thing I can do.
You do it very, very well. King Nothing. In honor of Larry King, who turned 86 today, And the reason,
wait a minute. Larry King's only 86.
Wait, is that human years?
It's been
been
30 years that he's been the butt of old jokes.
I know.
So you're telling me in 1989 he was only 56 years old?
Isn't that unreal?
Well, what happened in 1989?
The year I graduated high school.
Oh.
And that was 30 years ago.
Larry King was also...
And you said 30 years. He's been the butt of old jokes.
Larry King was also the butt of one of the best interview trolling jobs ever via courtesy of Jerry Seinfeld.
Now, this happened on Larry King's own show.
I love this so much.
This I don't know how randomly we stumbled across this again in show prep a few weeks ago. And Bickley was giggling like a school child.
I was.
Lasted how long?
9 years. 180 episodes.
You gave it up, right?
I did. So.
They didn't cancel you. You cancel them.
You're not aware of this?
No, I'm asking you.
You think I got canceled? Are you under the impression that I got canceled?
You? Have I hurt you, Jerry?
I thought that was pretty well documented. Is this still CNN?
Don't most shows go down a little?
Most people do also. Yeah, no, I went off the air. I was the number one show on television, Larry.
You were.
Do you know who I am?
Jewish guy, Brooklyn.
Yes.
Okay.
75 million viewers last episode.
What? Don't take it so bad.
Well, that's a big difference between being canceled and being number one.
Okay, I'm sorry. We'll be right back.
Jeez.
That is truly one of the greatest.
That's him talking with Seinfeld, obviously.
Probably his lowest moment as an interviewer. And that's what we choose to celebrate on his 86th birthday.
Okay, that's sorry.
Okay, fine. That's crazy.
Jeez.
You're not aware of this?
Hoboken, New Jersey. You're on with Jerry
Seinfeld. I am.
that's hilarious. Happy birthday, Larry King.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to this with Dave Pasch, but he was getting on a plane.
Is that what he's doing?
He was at the World. Yeah, at one point he said, I'm boarding.
Yeah, he's like, right, that was our cue for hurrying up, guys.
So I wanted to get to this, but he hasn't started college basketball games yet with Bill Walton. That happens after football season when they get into Pac-12 play. But Bill Walton, I don't know whether to believe that he knew this off the top of his head, but in the UCLA-UNLV broadcast from last weekend, this exchange happened.
How many countries border Mali? I'm going to say 3.
Double it.
6.
Plus 1.
7.
Algeria, Niger, Burkina Faso, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Senegal, and Mauritania.
I played that in show prep, and the reaction was, he had that written down. There's no way. I don't think so.
I don't think he did either.
No. Okay, so now hearing it again.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see this game. The first guy is answering Bill Walton's question, is what it sounds like. Bill probably asked him how many countries border Mali, meaning that Bill already knew the answer when he asked the question.
Yeah, but...
Because the way he answers it.
But why would you have that in your game?
Why?
I mean, it's Bill Walton, but...
They must have had a player from Mali there.
I guarantee you, if we had Bill Walton on this show again and gave him geography trivia, he'd probably knock it out of the park. Whereas I am, that is not a strong suit for me. I'm terrible at that. Especially non-United States geography. Oof. Did you see the moment in the Georgia-Auburn game where the running back, Ryan Harrion, for Georgia, ran out of bounds?
No.
And just trucked a photographer?
No, I missed that.
Knocked her out cold. There was a stoppage of the game.
Wow.
Stretchered off. It was serious.
Why
there was a lot
that?
Of very concerned people. The photographer's name is Chamberlain Smith. She's a Georgia photographer for the university. She tweeted out the picture that she took right before she got hit by Brian Harrion.
Wow.
And said, for those of you asking if I got the shot, here it is, the last thing my camera and I saw before being tackled. Brian Harrion, I hope you love this photo. He actually responded and said, you're the best. I knew it would be a great photo. Said he kneeled down and prayed for her well-being, and actually turned out to be a nice story. I always wonder about that when athletes, run into a photographer. So many times they just get up and they run back to the huddle.
Uh-huh.
There's very few times where they actually check on the well-being of the person in real time.
And very few times do they actually hold up and try to minimize the contact.
Yeah.
It's kind of like,
free shot.
Right, free shot. Boom. Yeah.
All right. How stoked are you, Bick, about the ultimate Jeopardy tournament of champions? It's going to be a television event. obviously, James Holzhauer, who had the long win streak, Ken Jennings, and Brad Rutter in this ultimate tournament. It's coming to television in January. I'm actually stoked about this. James Holzhauer, by the way, is already trolling Ken Jennings.
Is he really?
On Twitter, talking all kinds of smack.
Well, that's, I mean, you got to do that to get ratings up, right?
Oh, sure. But, I mean, James Holzhauer became a national obsession.
Yeah.
On a syndicated show in the year 2019 because of his dominance. I'm actually looking forward to that a lot.
But he didn't beat Ken Jennings' record, right?
He did not. And Brad Rutter is actually the biggest money winner of all time with all the tournament winnings he's had. Because he's been at this for like 20 years. So he's won like $4.2 million just on Jeopardy, which is amazing. Kevin Seifert, ESPN.com. Best and worst NFL quarterbacks of Week 11. Quarterback of the week. I thought this was surprising. Kyler Murray. He writes it... It might seem odd to highlight the performance of a quarterback who threw for 150 yards in a 10-point loss, but many of the high-end attributes we've seen from Murray this season were on display at Levi's Stadium, along with a few new ones. His total QBR rating, 93.3 this week, which leads me to believe that total QBR is very flawed as a rating. Yeah. I thought Kyler Murray was good.
Yeah.
But when you complete 24 passes for 150 yards, something's missing.
Is that the one that's out of 100?
Yes. That's a really, really good
score. That's a really good score without a lot of
now, there's
passing...
There's a lot that goes into that rating.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated formula.
Quality of opponent?
I think it factors in running and things like that, too, which would help his score, obviously. But Seifert writes, first, Murray faced continual harassment from the 49ers' strong defensive front. He was pressured on nearly half of his dropbacks, 17 of 38, and the pressure rate of 44.7 was the highest of his career. He took four sacks but otherwise went about calmly finding holes in the 49ers' defense. He threw 84.8% of his passes less than 10 yards past the line of scrimmage, the highest rate for a quarterback in Week 11, and the reason why his total yards were so low. Murray's accuracy has been inconsistent for parts of this season, but on Sunday, only 9.1% of his passes were off target, the fourth best rate of the week.
Wow.
Told you there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, clearly.
And that throw, and Dave Pasch brought it up when we were talking to him, that throw he made to Farrell Cooper, he couldn't have handed it any better to him.
He's made a lot of those. He's had a lot of those moments, and it's exactly what we didn't have with the previous first-round draft pick quarterback. He's reason why I'm incredibly bullish on this team's future. They've got a guy who most people now are claiming is a top 10 quarterback right now. And I don't argue with that.
You know what's really going to fuel that discussion?
Hmm.
The signature win against a good team. Had a couple of opportunities against San Francisco, especially, you know, not a lot of time, but if he was able to pull that game out or get it to overtime, that would have fueled that fire a lot.
Yeah.
It's coming. It's definitely coming.
Baker Mayfield and the Browns.
Yeah?
That's the game.
Is that a big win? When they beat head coach Steve Wilkes, is that going to be a big
Ooh.
Win?
Ooh.
Thanks to our guests, Brock Ewart, Dave Pasch. Thanks to you for listening. We appreciate it as always. We are out of here. Burns and Gambo are up next, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We'll see you.